This piece has been brought to you by Bonnie Plants, bonnieplants.com.
Hey, I'm Jimmy Carboni from Beer Sessions Radio. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good evening and welcome to Ferment About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Your weekly journey through all things fermented.
Archived on Stitcher, iTunes, and right here on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. My name is Chris Kuzmi.
And I'm Rachel Jacobs.
And I'm Mary Izette. I'm home and I'm really sick and I'm not hanging out with the rest of the crew tonight. I feel really bad.
Mary, here in spirit.
Yes, and poor we miss Mary. Her dearly. Yeah, she actually is, she is really sick. We're sad she can't be here. She really wanted to be here. We have a very fun show for you in store. But she has no voice and no presence, so her presence is... Her presence is absent. We are absent her presence. There we go. Which is not our presence. That's the lousiest present I want, is her absence.
Oh, that's very nice.
Ah, shucks. All right.
Shucks.
But you know what is present? A lot of fun events coming up here in New York City.
Yeah, what's happening?
Oh, what's happening, brother? Okay.
Tell us what's happening, Kuzma.
Well, they're in no particular order we're going to talk about Pride of Brooklyn Homebrew Festival, Saturday, April 16th at Little Field. If you go to littlefieldnyc.com/events and then all this other stuff. Basically, this is a great homebrew competition and really fun local homebrewing celebration. I don't know what the rewards are, but as an attendee, the reward is about 20 different homebrews from our local clubs. Speaking of local clubs and local people, congratulations to all the New York City winners of the National Homebrew Competition
That's right. We
held 2 weeks ago. In particular, because it's my alma mater, the New York City Homebrewers Guild's Nick Ladd and also Oscar Norlander /Peter Salmon/ Eric Norlander. These guys are going on to the next round. And to all of you who have entered and who in your region have not, the results are not posted or has not gone down, best of luck. And hopefully we'll see you, regardless, we'll see you hopefully at the National Homebrew Competition or conference, now called HomebrewCon. Getting down with the parlance of our time. Yeah.
You're going to dress up crazy yeah. to go to that now?
Oh, man, we always dress up crazy for club night. Yeah. Yeah, this year it's called HomebrewCon, and there are still tickets left. It is happening in June 9th through 11th in Baltimore. And if you go to homebrewcon.org, you can attend. And in order to attend, I believe you have to be a member of the American Homebrewers Association. And if you're not a member of the American Homebrewers Association, it is so worth it. Please do so. There are many reasons why, including local discounts to breweries, beer bars, etc., that basically pay for your membership, which is pretty great.
How do you join if you're not a member?
If you're not a member, you go to the American Homebrewers Association.org you join up. You get up in there. You go to that join membership page. But other cool stuff in New York, in particular, one that we love every year called Ferment. That's right. It is on Sunday, April 10th from 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. It is free. And this is a homebrew fermentation – a home fermentation festival. Everybody kind of – it's basically a giant potluck. It's just people
just
who love to ferment.
Bring your best fermentations, whatever it may be, sauerkraut to like just random things you have in a jar.
Kvass, homebrew.
Kvass, kefir, kombucha.
Yeah, not only is it like a giant potluck, but there are a couple seminars that happen throughout the day, so it's a good place to get your learn on and learn from your peers and get into other fermentations and find that parallel of flavors and science, or should I say magic?
A little bit of both.
Magic is just another word for science. Or science is just another word for magic.
When you don't understand it, yeah.
And Tap New York on April 23rd and 24th, 2016, Tap New York. It's a New York State Beer Festival, and it is freaking awesome. It's up at Hunter Mountain. It is totally worth going to. It's a couple of days of delicious, and New York State has been growing and growing and growing, New York State beer scene has been growing, and the New York State agriculture for brewing has been growing and growing, so a lot of farm breweries are there and show up, and it's really just, I can't recommend it enough. There's still tickets to that. Speaking of new breweries, I would say about a year ago.
Almost a year ago, exactly. May last year, right, guys?
I think we were, what, June? I think we officially opened in June. Right, Dan? Yeah.
And the we speak of is LIC Beer Project. Today in-house, we have Dan Acosta and David Oskerson from LIC Beer Project.
Thanks. Cheers. Happy to be here.
Thank you for coming, or however you reacted to our intro. Thanks, I'll be here for at least another half hour. Maybe.
So what is LIC Beer Project?
Let's start at the beginning. Before we go to LIC Beer Project, well, it all ties in. Mm-hmm. Who are you, and how did we get to LIC Beer Project? Let's start with you, Dan. You've been with this project from the very beginning, from inception.
So I'm Daniel Acosta. I'm the head brewer at LIC Beer Project. I founded the company, the brewery, about a year ago. Maybe 2 years ago, from the time that we came up with the concept for the brewery. Kind of just fell in love with beer about 12 years ago during a backpacking trip through Europe. Went on to study fermentation science, brewing science at the Siebel Institute and Dumans Academy in Munich. And kind of just was like a Rembel home brewer in my garage until I kind of landed in the project here. We focus primarily on Belgian-style ales, wild ales, but we brew we brew other styles as well.
You were talking just before the show, a vacation gone wild in around, what was it, 2004, 2006?
Yeah, 2004.
2004. Tell us about this trip.
I was on my way to Phuket, Thailand when my trip was kind of derailed because of the tsunami that took place there. So I didn't really know what I was going to do much in Southeast Asia. So I had some buddies of mine that were backpacking through Europe, so I head back to Europe, landed in Spain, head north through France, and wound up in Holland. Then we head over to Brussels, and that's where my beer journey began. I was very familiar with beers stateside, but that's where my love for Belgian ales and, you know, sour ales specifically took place, and kind of just turned into some crazy expedition after that.
How many different breweries did you visit on that trip?
Many.
Many. Many, many, many.
A lot of it was a blur.
Yeah.
Your Phuket trip was intended to be how long?
Probably like 2 weeks.
2 weeks. And that trip ended up being how long?
3 months.
3 months.
There's a lot of beer to drink.
Yeah, I blame the beer.
Whose voice was that? Damon Oskerson. We've known each other a long time. Yeah. Tell us about your beer journey.
My beer journey was more of a, you know, kind of an interest. You know, when I met you, I was living in New York City, and mm-hmm. sort of, it was probably like 6 years ago or something like that, when mm-hmm. kind of the height when the craft beer was really starting to boom here in New York City. So I was going to beer festivals and beer events all over the place, and just kind of immersed myself in the beer culture that was exploding here in New York City. And obviously it's still exploding, but that was just kind of in the infancy. You know, I got into just, you know, like Dan, I drank some of the microbrews back in the day. I liked flavorful beer, but it was more of a lot of the Belgian ales. I was drinking Saison DuPont, the Chimay's, the monastic-inspired beers. Those beers really actually brought me into craft beer. And then from there, I went on to American craft beer and got really into that. And then so so I was definitely immersed in that culture in New York City, familiarizing myself with all the breweries, trying everything I could, reading a lot about beers, about tasting beer, and then I started homebrewing beer. And when I was homebrewing beer, I was actually living in Westchester at that point, and that's when I met Dan with the Westchester Homebrew Organization. I knew he was starting.
Who?
Yeah.
Who?
Yeah, exactly. And they're an amazing organization. They were really great, really supportive, and I learned a hell of a lot. I actually brewed a lot with our friend Ed Goldberg. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. I started brewing a lot, and I went kind of like
Peekskill.
Yeah, and he's at Peekskill, and, you know, just brewing all grain right off the bat, and then started doing some of it on my own. And then I met Dan, and I knew Dan was starting a brewery up, and that's sort of where it started on some of the meetings. And then we actually went to Tap New York, which you were mentioning, that year, and we rode together on the bus, and then we basically went through the whole festival drinking all sorts of beer, just sort of like, you know, talking about the beer, talking about what kinds of beers we like to brew and all that stuff. And then it sort of really formed from there.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
So LIC Beer Project now is open and almost a year into it. How long did it take to get it built and how big is it?
It took us the better part of a year. We have like 6,000 square foot space. Pretty much built the whole space from scratch.
You were a contractor in your former life, right?
I was, yes.
Yeah, it's gorgeous in there. You did a great job.
Yeah, was that helpful with making the space?
It was, yeah. I had quite a bit of experience working in breweries and working on the consulting side and construction specifically of mechanical operations and things. So building a brewery was quite fun. doing your own project.
Yeah, quite fun. Finally doing it for you and with some informed experience.
Yeah, right
on. To do it. And so it's a 20-barrel system?
20-barrel, 3-vessel brew house. We have 40-barrel fermenters. We have another one on the way. So we have about 5,000 barrels of capacity.
It's fantastic. But that's not all you have, right? There's some things that we haven't seen in New York before.
It's a secret.
Yeah, so pretty inspired from my journeys through Belgium, I really became very interested in wild sour ales. So I wanted to bring that to New York City, and I wanted to kind of bring its... have New York City be its own home to really traditional barrel-aged sour beers. And I thought the best way to do that was to introduce a cool ship. So during the build-out, we did a lot of experimentation with the microflora that we had, you know, resident in our area in Long Island City. We placed a lot of dishes up on the roof. We did a lot of plating of different bacteria and yeast. We sent them out to labs to help us isolate different yeast and bacteria. And we found that we had a very rich flora, specifically in the fall and winter months. So we decided to build a room under negative pressure to try to isolate, keep all the bugs and bacteria and yeast in the room. Mm-hmm. And we started brewing Cool Ship beer.
Fantastic. How many Cool Ship batches have you done?
We've done quite a few. We have about 100 barrels. 100 barrels now at the brewery. We're expanding that quite rapidly, bringing some fooders on now. And then we have an additional square footage behind us that we're going to be building out our barrel house. So our goal is to, you know, have about 1,000 oak barrels filled with Cool Ship beer.
Oh, man. That's
so tell us what a Cool Ship is.
So
exactly.
A Cool Ship is a traditional vessel specifically used in Belgium to capture wild yeast and bacteria to spontaneously ferment. It's the way lambic beers are traditionally brewed. We don't call them lambic beers in respect to the brewers in the, you know, in the Seine Valley and in Belgium specifically.
Right.
So we call them just wild beers, you know, spontaneous beers. So we rely on the natural yeast and bacteria and natural microflora to ferment the beers. So we go into the cool ship at boiling temperatures. We open up all the vents, allow the exchange of air to take place, and rapidly cool down the wort to about room temperature, 68, 70 degrees, and then we go right into the barrels. Barrels start fermenting within 16 to 24 hours.
Really? Wow. But just that, oh, yeah. With the cultures that you've trapped in that room?
Yeah.
That's awesome. And what kind of... you sent them into labs? Do you know any names of the guys you got
do,
in there?
We do. We actually found some really interesting Brettanomyces strains at the brewery that are found on fig trees.
Oh, you were saying that.
Yeah, so we found that there's a large population of fig trees in the Astoria, Ditmars area.
Or at least historically, too.
Historically, you know, I guess a lot Greeks. Of Greek, Italian migrants, when they moved to the area, they liked figs, I guess, mm-hmm. So they planted a lot of trees. So we found a lot of bacteria and yeast that you find on figs are the primary yeast and bacteria that we're finding at the brewery.
That's very fun.
Yeah, so it's pretty interesting.
With that, we're going to take a really quick break. Thanks for listening to Ferment About It.
We are back.
It's not just your garden. It's the way you live. And there's so much to know. But you have help. Bonnie Plants. Now with Bonnie's app, Homegrown, you can learn about veggie and herb varieties, track and record your garden with photos and notes, share on Facebook and Twitter, and so much more. How'd you ever grow without it? Get Homegrown with Bonnie Plants for iPhone and Android. The more you know, the better you can grow with Bonnie.
Welcome back to Ferment About It. We're talking about Forget About It. Figs that it, figs about, it. With Dan Acosta and Damon Oskarson of LIC Beer Project, one of New York City's newer breweries, but they're just about to celebrate their one-year anniversary. What is the exact date on that? Are you guys having a festivity for that?
We are. We actually have something in the works, trying to plan a festival for probably around the July time.
Right on.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a bit about it yet?
A little bit of New York City's first sour beer festival.
Right on. Ooh. That's awesome.
So we're working on that.
That's exciting. Speaking of sour, so we were just before the break, we were talking about the kind of microflora that's generally on the outside of figs that we're finding here. What would you say characterizes the flavor profile of what you guys are finding with your beers? Are you guys also what sort of substrate? What kind of a malt bill are you guys trying with or experimenting with?
Yeah, so we're going with a really dextrose wort. We've done a few turbid mashes. They're cool, but not a ton of fun on a large scale.
Right.
So we try to go in with a real dextrinous wort, give a lot of food for the yeast and bacteria to work on. But most of the grain bill is just Pilsner malt. A little bit of aromatic in some of our grain bills, and then just wheat. Large percentage of wheat, 30-35%, upwards of 40% wheat malt. Right. And most of our spontaneous beers,
which is a pretty that's a kind of a good, you see that kind of combo a lot out in Belgium for sure for this kind of,
yeah, we try to adapt a lot of the traditional brewing techniques that the Belgians have used for many years. It's kind of proven, especially the we've talked a lot with the guys up at Allagash as well, and they kind of adapted those principles, so it's been working for them as well.
It's working great for you guys. What is this that we're drinking right now?
So this is a Trigger Rye. This is a really sessionable 7.5%.
It does not drink 7.5%. It's not hot at all.
Yeah, so our yeast is really evolving now. Well, it's a couple of Saison strains with some Brettanomyces, a strain of Brettanomyces that I've isolated. And it's really starting to take its home now. And really, it rips through the beer. You know, this beer finishes below one Plato, so...
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And a lot of the beers that Dan likes to brew and which we all prefer are really highly attenuated beers.
Sure.
Drink dry, you know, so you can drink more of them. They don't sit heavy on you when you're drinking them. So.
Yeah, so now that we've really gotten into the yeast and got it working really well, we're going to start introducing some bacteria and stuff to some of our saisons. That's what the fooders are going to come into place for. So we'll start moving like this beer, Trigger Rye, Arden Core, which is our core beer that we brew, start moving them into fooders with some bacteria, specifically, you know, lacto and PDO.
Fantastic. Are you getting new fooders or are you getting the fooders?
New fooders.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so they'll be all your inoculate?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So when you guys started, you just started with an open fermentation?
Just our spontaneous program goes through the cool ship, so those are the only beers that are exposed to the natural microflora that's in the brewery. Although we have isolated some yeast strains that were in the cool ship room, and we've repitched them into other barrels that have some of our house saison yeast.
A lot of home brewers are scared to use the same equipment for that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Would you have advice for home brewing and are you scared of that for cross-contamination?
Well, if you saw my brewery, you'd probably give me some advice.
you might cringe a little bit. Sometimes we do. But.
Yeah, we're as careful as we can be with the brewery. We during the build out, we did build out a space for a lab up in our mezzanine, so we'll start to really put that to work soon, so we can start, you know, plating valves and checking to make sure we don't have cross contamination. But up until this point, we've kind of just been doing what we want to do, which is kind of crazy.
Right.
clearly, we're very concerned.
Yeah, clearly. Listen, no, it's great. I mean, as a home brewer, I mean, I'm not a scientist. I do not have a science background. That's kind of why brewing with Mary is so fun, because she has that, and I'm like, forget it. Yeah. It's going to be cool. Except I'm not really like, forget it. It's going to be cool. I'm that paranoid guy because I'm just paranoid about it. I hear that, you know, cleaner is better and all that stuff. Of course it is. But I can be pretty anal retentive with my cleaning practices. And Mary's generally like, no, it's cool. Don't worry about it. Because
when you start a brewery, and, you know, you embark on a project like this, these are the beers that we want to brew.
Right.
So we want to have that. You know, I don't really necessarily like to call it a house character, but we like to let the yeast do their job. We don't really want to get in the way of that. More recently, we're starting to introduce some new yeast strains to the brewery. We're starting to do some more hop forward beers. And we also use some Abbey yeast in the brewery. So we are careful, and we keep separate hoses and pumps and gaskets and things like that. And we have a really solid cleaning regimen at the brewery.
Right.
So. Yeah, I mean, joking aside, we do have a procedure to keep things separate so we don't cross-contaminate stuff.
Right.
For sure.
And we're using chemicals that are kind of more aggressive than some of the more friendly stuff that we have.
When needed,
like, you know, parasitic and caustic versus some other things. How many people are working at the brewery right now? And where are you distributed?
Are you
self-distributing?
Yeah, we're self-distributing. We're getting ready to move out of the city. My hometown's in Westchester County, so we do sell a good number of beer up in the Hudson Valley, so we're going to be expanding that next few months. We're discussing distribution upstate, but we currently sell beer in all five boroughs, mainly Brooklyn, Manhattan, Queens, but we touch the other boroughs a little bit.
Or do you have bottles too?
On tap, we're getting ready to roll out the bottles probably in June. We have a guy automated bottling line heading our way. So,
awesome!
We'll be rolling out some packaging this summer.
So the automated bottle line, is that bottles on wheels, or are you buying line?
We're buying a fully automated line.
Okay, gotcha.
Awesome. Yeah, all bottle condition. So we're gonna hit the package pretty hard.
Right.
Which of your beers are you gonna bottle?
We'll bottle all our Saisons. So Ardencore, we're working, developing a little petite Saison right now, small ABV, like, you know, 3.5-4% that we're working on.
The Abbey beers too.
Yeah, we'll bottle some. We have a Patter's beer that we've been working on for a while, we're going to be rolling that out.
We have Evening's Empire, which is sort of a Belgian-inspired stout, which is on tap here in the Tiki Bar over here in Roberto's.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's and they'll all be bottle conditioned too.
Awesome.
For sure.
Awesome. Let's talk about Potter's Beer. What is a Potter's Beer?
So this is something...
Potter's Beer. Yeah, P-A-T-E.
So this is something that I came across in Belgium many years ago. It's a beer that monks would brew, you know, at matin prayer and at mealtime. So it's a low ABV. Some people refer to it as a single. So, you know, low ABV... Abbey beer that they would only brew and drink for themselves, really, at the monasteries. So we kind of wanted to adapt this. So Potter's Beer stands for Father's Beer. So the monks would drink that kind of just like at meals and stuff, because they were drinking a lot of big ABV beers, I guess, the rest of the time. So we kind of wanted to adapt that for like our kind of house beer at the brewery, something that we can enjoy, you know, after work hours or during meals. So we've been working it for a little while on the pilot system, and we just brewed a big batch of it. So we're going to roll that out.
Right on.
I'm super excited for it.
I'm glad that's coming. Most of your beers have been yeast forward. How have you supported it with hops, or what kind of approaches have you done, and what are some of your favorite hops to use with these kind of beers?
I mean, you know, we really like the noble hops, using them, but we certainly put our own American twist on a lot of these beers.
Sure.
We're often using Centennial, Cascade, the IPAs and stuff. We might use Citra and some of the other more obscure ones. But, we've been using a variety of Zythos, Amarillo we really like to use in some of the Abbey beers. They tend to go really good with the Belgian yeast strains that we have. But yeah, I mean, certainly we throw a whole variety of different hops in them.
Yeah, sure. We've been experimenting a lot with the hop varietals and how they react with our different yeast strains, specifically Brettanomyces. We found that a lot of the characteristics that we find in Brett, specifically in the primary, really lend well to some of the fruit characters that are in these hops. So instead of kind of trying to complement, you know, instead of trying to find contrasting characteristics between the yeast and the hops, we look to more find complementary characteristics where we're blurring the line between the hops and the yeast, so you can't necessarily tell which profile is prevalent.
That's really cool.
Yeah, our modern aberration pale ale is a lot like that. It's Brettanomyces in the primary, and it kicks off a ton of fruit in the primary when you use Brett, and especially Dan's strain that he has, and it goes great with some of the fruitier hops that we're using, and you really don't know where, you know, the hops and the yeast begins or vice versa.
Right.
It's cool.
That's fun when you're dealing with those esters to do that. You're dealing with those esters. What about temperature? What's your favorite temperature for some of these? Well, if you're fermenting in the barrel with the cool ships, are you temp controlling the barrels?
Yes, yeah, so we like the brewery to be like in the mid-60s for the barrels. You know, during build out, we put a whole HVAC system in the brewery so we can control temperature. We have a small little barrel room that we have about 40 barrels in. We try to keep that like 64, 65 degrees for the barrels. And we try to keep the brewery around 68 degrees all year. But for our stainless beers, for our, you know, our saisons and our monastic style beers, our abbey beers, we let them free rise. We don't, like I mentioned earlier, we don't really like to have like some crazy fermentation chamber on our beers.
Right. What do you pitch at then?
Pitch in the low 70s for most of our saison yeast, and they finish, you know, upwards of 90 degrees.
That's, yeah.
Which is kind of scary for, you know, a lot of people, specifically home brewers. They get, even myself, I was guilty of this. You know, I want to always make like these crazy fermentation chambers, but these yeasts, you know, they want to go hot. They want to get hot. They want to attenuate out. They want to kick off all these crazy phenols and esters, and they like to do their work at those temperatures.
Yeah. Do you get? I mean, I'm not certainly not tasting any alcohol heat here.
No, not at all.
What's a general conditioning time frame for a beer that you'd like it to 90?
Like 4 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah. So our beers, you know, and these beers are even really young, especially our saisons. They really could see some more time on the yeast. But, you know, from a production standpoint, we need to.
Yeah.
You know, can't get too crazy.
Until you have that other room.
I think you'll see when we have a fooder and we start putting some of the saisons in fooders, we're going to give them a little more time. Mm-hmm. We have some pretty, I mean, obviously we have complex yeast strains that we're using. So over time, we're going to see some interesting development and still see some of our yeast strains evolve a little bit more.
Yeah, we're starting to fill a lot of bottles now. So we'll have some bottles coming out in the next few months. So you'll see how some of these beers evolve in the bottles.
Sure.
That's very fun.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So you guys are just shy of a year old. So what are you guys looking for in the next year?
We're really looking to just keep perfecting these beers. You know, that's why we decided to call it a project. It's what it is. You know, we're on a journey into these beers. We're just scratching the surface. We're like just took our step on the first rung of the ladder in these styles. So we're looking to just keep expanding what we're working on, and really move our sour program and our barrel program to great heights. That's our goal. We really, really want to have one of the largest barrel programs. So that's what we're after.
I love it.
Yeah.
How soon are you moving into that, opening up that back space to be able to achieve some of that?
We're discussing it right now. So gotcha. We're in the planning stages.
It's fantastic.
We're excited.
It's a really beautiful space, and it's really delicious beer. And what you just said is paraphrased on your website, and I want to quote it now because it's awesome.
Cheers.
LIC Beer Project is a collaborative journey of insight, experience, travel, education, and the goal to achieve a beer we have yet to discover. And I just think that's beautiful, and you guys are doing great at it.
Thanks, good
beautiful. So that website is licbeerproject.com. We've been speaking to Damon Oskarson and Dan Acosta of LIC Beer Project. Thank you so much for joining us on Ferment About It.
Thanks for having us. Cheers, man.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.